just to be stronger than me. You've been here 7 years longer than me. Don't you know you're supposed to be the man? Now pale in comparison to who you think I am. You always want to talk it through. I don't care. I always have to comfort you.
That was Stronger Than Me from Amy Winehouse's first album, Frank. In his book, Amy, My Daughter, Mitch Winehouse pays tribute to the talent, music, and life of his daughter, Amy Winehouse, who passed away on July 23, 2011. Amy was known for her Grammy Award-winning voice and iconic style. Mitch's book offers a private account of Amy's early years, professional success, struggles with addiction, and eventual untimely death. Mitch is a taxi cab driver and jazz singer himself. His book was published by It Books, an imprint of HarperCollins, and I'm pleased it brings him here today. Welcome, Mr. Winehouse.
Thank you for having me.
So, just listening to that phenomenal voice, obviously the first question has to be, was Amy musical as a child?
She was very musical as a child, and it's funny you should play that track, because not a lot of people play those songs from Frank. They play Back to Black. The first album, for me, is a wonderful album, because it really encapsulated her at a time when the second album, Back to Black, was written about Blake. The first album was a much more innocent time in her life, and I loved to listen to that. It was just beautiful. And she was very musical as a child, in answer to your question.
Well, we'll talk about why Frank is sort of the innocent, pure, if you will, Amy, the one that makes you smile. I mean, you're not bobbing your head to the songs. What is it about that? What comes through for you when you listen to those songs?
Well, you know, I'm listening to Amy as a much younger person. You know, Amy then was she was probably 18 when she 19 when she recorded a lot of those songs, and it just reminds me of the wonderful times we had, and the process that went into recording the album, and it was a great process for her, and it's something that she loved. So it really takes me back to some really great times that we had.
So where did her love of jazz come from? Was it from you, her grandmother, from both of you?
Yeah. Janice's, Amy's mum, there were four professional musicians in her family. So there was music all around her. But, you know, Amy grew up listening to Maya Jazz, Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Ella, Sarah Vaughan, and my mum even met Glenn Miller, can you believe it, in the 40s, in the war. So, you know, Amy kind of grew up with all these jazz influences, yeah.
So what was her relationship like with your mom?
A wonderful relationship. You know, really, my mother and my mother's sister, they were twins. They looked after Amy when Janice and I had to... We went to work, you know, we were ordinary working people. So... my mum would look after Amy with her sister, and or one of my other aunties would look after her. So she had this influence apart from her parents. I grew up in a similar environment. You know, there were lots of family all around me, and I thought it was great for Amy and my son Alex to go through that as well. And the relationship that she had with my mother was particularly strong, and my mum would take Amy to auditions, and you know my mum would tell Amy how she should perform and what she should do, and you know of course when she didn't get the part she would sort of chastise her because she never got the star role and things like that. So you know they had a real deep love for each other, which was wonderful. And of course when my mother passed away in May 2006, it was really the start of Amy's problems, because immediately after that Blake re-emerged. So we have somebody, Amy, who was vulnerable at that time, just lost my mum, and Blake re-emerging onto the scene. That's not a recipe for success. You know, that's a recipe for disaster.
And you're talking about Blake, Amy's boyfriend, husband? I'm having a brain snap at the moment.
At that point, he was re-emerging as her boyfriend, and later they were to be married.
Mm-hmm. And so talk about Blake, and who was Blake, and what kind of influence did he have on Amy?
Well, Blake's in prison. You know, Blake's spent the best part of the last 5 years in prison. And Blake was, when I met him, he was a charming young man. I didn't realise that he had a serious drug dependency. And, you know, like a lot of people in his position, they are extremely manipulative. And he has admitted that he was the one that introduced Amy to Class A drugs. Whether she would have found her way there without him, I have no idea. But he said that he introduced her to Class A drugs, and she took to it like a duck to water. You know, a great thing for a husband to say about his wife. But that was the case. He admitted it, and he has to accept responsibility for that. But he's certainly not responsible for her death. He wouldn't want her to die. And but in terms of her Class A drug situation, he introduced her to mm-hmm. that.
And once that happened, how did your relationship change with Amy? Did it change?
Well, if anything, if we could have got any closer, because it was a very difficult time, and it's difficult to remember what my mindset was at that time, but I felt that as soon as we had ascertained what the situation was, and that Amy was also in the grip of this terrible addiction, which is really an illness. You know, we don't regard, I certainly don't regard it as, nobody chooses to be an alcoholic and nobody chooses to be an addict. You know, I regard it as an illness and it should be treated as such. But as soon as we realised that Amy was in the grip of this illness, addiction, you know, instead of abandoning her, as some people thought we should have done, you know, we tried to nurture her and support her in the best way that we could. We wanted her to know that we were there for her all the time. And we would never leave her, and we would never abandon her. And that's generally how we conducted ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we would get advice from everybody. You know, I sat with six of the most eminent clinical psychologists in Great Britain, brilliant men, professor this, doctor that. And between the six of them, they were actually arguing in front of me about the best way to approach this. You know, so in other words, there were six different opinions around the table, and they were so unprofessional, they were arguing amongst each other. So really, nobody's written the definitive book of how to deal with addiction within the family, and you've really got to go where your heart dictates. And some people can adopt the tough approach, and I can't, you know, I couldn't abandon my daughter. So that's how we generally approached it, and we tried to protect her in the best way that we could.
I'm speaking with Mitch Winehouse about his book, Amy, My Daughter. I'm Jonathan Capehart, in for Leonard Lopate. So as Amy struggled with her addiction, were there times when you felt that you didn't even recognize her?
No, not really. You know, the thing is, as soon as Blake went to prison, which was maybe only 6 months after they got married, that was really when her recovery was beginning. The recovery took a long time. You know, it took over a year for her to be clean of drugs, because she was clean from
2008.
December 2008. So it took over a year. But really, as soon as Blake wasn't there to influence and manipulate her, then she began a slow recovery.
And why did she feel it was important to recover, important to get over her addiction?
That's a great question, but, you know, you'd have to ask her that. And because I don't know. You see, everybody has their own rock bottom. You know, it certainly wasn't me shouting. It wasn't me pretending, you know, because I pretended to have fits and pretended to have heart attacks. And I felt like I was having a heart attack half the time, mm-hmm. you know, and they'd take me to the hospital, and then Amy would come to the hospital, and she knew there was nothing wrong with me. You know, we tried to shock her, whatever it was. You know, and there were terrible scenes with drug dealers, and, you know, I could have been hurt, but I was protecting my daughter. Mm-hmm. So clearly she didn't like to see me in that situation. She told me that she didn't like the look on her mother's face. And whatever her personal reasons were, she quit. And December 2008, that was it. She was done.
But wasn't one of the reasons that she quit was because she wanted to start a family?
Well, that's a very good point. and I forgot that. I'm glad you reminded me. Yeah, we spoke about everything and anything. Sometimes it was a little bit difficult for me because being Amy's dad, and she would say, "Dad, I'm not able to have children now." And I'd say, "You need to speak to your mum or my wife Jane about that. You know, really, I'm a bit uncomfortable." But it was nice that she trusted me enough to speak to me about that stuff. And physically, she couldn't have children at that point. And when she could have children, which was later on, and she was clear of drugs for after about a year or so, she was delighted when she was told she could have children. Mm-hmm. And her and her boyfriend, Reg, who she was with for a wonderful 18 months, the last 18 months, they were trying to have children, and they would have got married too. So she was very happy that she was able to have children.
In one of your interviews with News of the World, you were quoted as saying, quote, "I ruined something beautiful."
No, not me. Whoa. That was...
Back. Who said that?
Back right up.
Who said that?
That was Blake.
Okay, Blake.
Blake said...
My apologies.
That's all right.
My apologies.
I don't want the whole New York thing was me.
No.
Blake said...
Blake said in an interview with News of the World, quote, "I ruined something beautiful."
Yeah, at the same time, really, I think a couple of days earlier, he said he was the one to introduce... He was the one that introduced Amy to Class A drugs, and she took to it like a duck to water. Then a day or two after that, he said, "I ruined something beautiful." That's what he said.
And your response to that?
Well, you know, it's true.
He's right.
But he didn't. You know, he didn't permanently ruin her, because, as I say, she recovered, and then she started her struggles with alcohol, which is a progression from drugs. You know, once she quit drugs, she then went on to a clothes buying spree, and I'd take them all back, you know, after she bought them, and we would just laugh about that. And then there was exercise. She was in the gym for 4 or 5 hours a day, and then unfortunately the alcohol began to take hold.
So it wasn't that she was doing drugs and alcohol. Quit the drugs, and alcohol came later.
Yeah, but she was drinking while she was taking drugs as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the happier time. How did Amy first get discovered by 19 Management?
Okay, well, what happened was that Amy was at stage school. She was at a stage school called Sylvia Young. And incidentally, we now have the Amy Winehouse Scholarship for a young person at Sylvia Young. And at Sylvia Young, there was one of her colleagues, or one of her school chums, was a guy called Tyler James. And Tyler would sing with Amy, and he recommended Amy to his management company, Brilliant 19. That's how that happened.
And 19 is the same manager. They also, or Simon Fuller, it's Simon Fuller's company, and he managed the Spice Girls.
That's so quite right.
Why did she eventually break ties with 19?
Because, they had 3 or 4 decent years together. And she felt, you know, her judgment, her business judgment was always spot on. She felt that she'd gone as far as they could go together. She wanted a break into America. They didn't think she was right for it. And then when she went to her new manager, Ray at Metropolis, who obviously we're still with, you know, he felt that they could break in America. Amy felt that she could do it. And 19 didn't want her to do it, and so basically that was it.
So how did you? This is Ray Cosbert.
Ray Cosbert, yeah.
So how did you find him? You found him.
Well, it's not that I found him. There was a guy that always used to sit at Amy's concerts, and I wondered what this guy did. And he was the promoter, and you know, Amy would come off stage, and there'd be a bottle of champagne, and I thought, who is this? But he was familiar, and then we started to speak, and we both go, you know, we both follow the same football team, soccer team in London, mm-hmm. called Tottenham Hotspur, and he sits 4 rows behind me at football, just as a pure coincidence. And so, you know, and then we've got this great rapport together, and you know, we both commiserate with each other after the matches because we always get beaten, you know. So that's really how it came about with Ray. And Amy really loved Ray, mm-hmm. because Amy knew Ray as her promoter. So they had this relationship before anyway.
And so how did he push her career forward?
Well, what he did was he enabled Amy to do all the things that she wanted to, and that's to work on a new album, which was Back to Black, break into America, which which Amy did. She debuted here in New York. I think it was 2006 at Joe's Pub. And he enabled Amy, as any good manager will do, to accomplish her goals. And you know, thanks to Ray, or you know, he enabled Amy to, or helped Amy to bring out that the album Back to Black, which she won 5 Grammys for. And so Ray did a, but it wasn't just that. I mean, Ray was like her second father, and her brother and uncle and best friend all rolled into one. I mean, he's just a wonderful man. And really, it was the best decision that she made in her career.
So she never shared her songs with you unless she considered them finished. Was her songwriting process very, very private?
I really don't know how she did it. I mean, she came to Spain with my wife and I. My wife, Jane, her dad has got a place in Spain with a, it's very private, with a swimming pool. It's in the country. It's beautiful. And we took Amy there a couple of times, and she would spend literally the whole morning and afternoon in her room just strumming a guitar and you know, and writing stuff down for the album. Don't know what this is.
Just a little music. I'm speaking with Mitch Winehouse about his book Amy, My Daughter.
Sounds nice though.
We'll continue after the news.
Sweet guitar, humbled by the bass. So when the beat kicks in, everything falls into place, and it overpowers me. I can't help but dance.
That's Halftime from Amy Winehouse's last album, Lioness Hidden Treasures. I'm Jonathan Capehart in for Leonard Lopate, talking still with Mitch Winehouse, whose new book, Amy, My Daughter, from It Books is out. And I wish you could all see Mr. Winehouse's face as the song, as Halftime was playing, his head started bopping. And now You're wiping away tears. What was it about listening to Halftime that made you react this way, in a way that when we played Stronger Than Me didn't?
Well, this is from the new album, although it was recorded, how it got left off the first album, which was frank, I've got no idea, because it's beautiful. And it was the whole idea of the new album, Lioness Hidden Treasures, was to map Amy's musical progression. So this is one of the earlier songs. It didn't get on, how that didn't get on Frank, I don't know, but it didn't get on Frank. So it's now on Lioness Hidden Treasures. But it was a song from that era, you know. So we're talking about, well, nearly the best part of 10 years ago. So that's how long ago it was.
So Lioness Hidden Treasures is not just songs she recorded before she died, meaning within months before she died, but they span her career.
Spans her
over 10 years.
Career over 10 years, that's right.
And this one was something that was supposed, Halftime was supposed to be on Frank, the first album.
Well, I say it was supposed to be. I mean, I know
that it should have been.
Yeah, but I know that it was recorded around that time. I don't know how it never got on the album. And to be honest, until I heard it again when we sort of previewed the album, I had no idea that it even existed. It's just beautiful.
So this makes the third album.
Yeah.
Are there differences between, in terms of production, differences between how Frank was produced versus Back to Black versus Lioness Hidden Treasures?
Well, the first, Frank was a simple album, and not overproduced. Back to Black was a heavily produced album, and it's a, you know, in its own way, it is regarded as one of the great albums. You know, they say Sgt. Pepper's, Back to Black, and yet, of course, most of the songs were written about Blake, so it's very difficult for me to listen to it. The new album, Lioness Hidden Treasures, that was a kind of a joint effort between Salaam Remy, who was Amy's producer, and Mark Ronson, who was Amy's another of her producers.
Did she team up with other singers on Lioness?
Lioness, we have Nas. Mm-hmm. That's on Like Smoke, which is another beautiful, beautiful song. And of course, there's the Tony Bennett duet on the album as well. So that's lovely.
Did she have more involvement in some of the albums?
What do you mean, more involvement?
I suppose, not just writing the songs, but basically, I don't know if musicians direct.
The production. You know, I sat with her on the final day of Back to Black, the final edits or whatever they did, the final production, and she was the boss. You know, I mean, and this was new to me, because to me, she was my little girl. You know, she had, I mean, in the nicest possible way, she wasn't a diva or a prima donna or anything like that, you know, but she knew exactly what she was doing, and all these other people in the control booth or whatever they were doing, they knew that she knew exactly what she was doing, and she knew what she wanted, and she knew the sound that she wanted. And for me, it was, you know, it was, I just couldn't believe it. You know, this is my little girl, who not only is a great singer, not only is a great writer, you know, but she, you know, she's actually fully in control of this process.
Where did that confidence come from? I mean, she was 28 when she passed, correct?
27,
she
going was, on she 28.
Was, she was 27, going on 28.
Yeah.
That's rather young for someone to be so in command, so in control. Where did that come from?
Well, some people would argue that she wasn't in control for most of her life, would be unkind. I mean, there were periods where she was out of control, frankly. But musically...
Right, musically.
I was a professional singer when I was a young... Well, a semi-professional singer when I was a young man. And then I had to get a proper job when my kids came along, and, you know, because I had to supplement it. And so she had these influences with my mother, with the jazz, with my singing, and, of course, with her mother, as I said before. You know, there was musicianship in her mother's family. So, you know, she had... That was the mix. That was the recipe for Amy. So there was a lot of pretty good stuff in there.
Go ahead. Finish.
No, and I'm saying, in terms of control, in a lot of her life, there were things at that time were kind of spiralling out of control, which she ultimately regained control to a certain extent. But music and of her business, she was fully in control. You know, people have criticised us for allowing her to go on stage and to do tours. She was the one who, in spite of Ray and I saying, Amy, this is a lot of tour dates here. I want to do it, Dad. It keeps me busy, etc. You know, she was fully in control of everything that she wanted to do.
Who was her idol? Who was the number one person in music in the world who she idolized above all others?
What a great question. I think we're talking Stevie Wonder. When she was younger, she loved Michael Jackson, Donny Hathaway, Tony Bennett. But you know, the albums that she... I'm not going to big myself up here. You know, when I made my album, which she helped me with, and she produced my album, we went and we did 40, just to see how it sounded, 40 covers that she wanted, that we were thinking about doing with a pianist, and she kept that, and she put it on her computer, and she played that all the time. So that was lovely, and I'd go into the house and I would hear her playing my songs, which was lovely for me. You know, but I mean, she just loved Tony Bennett. I mean, and he is such a great man, and he was so kind to Amy. And of course, when she did the duet with Tony, and they gave her six songs to sing, she said immediately, "I'm doing Body and Soul." And he said, "Well, why why would you do it? Why do you not want to think about it? She said, no, that's my dad's favourite song. So she came back and she told me, and the rest is history. Of course, Tony and Amy won the Grammy for that song.
Final question. Which song on all three albums exemplifies, typifies your daughter, Amy Winehouse?
Well, I have to discount the second album, really, because, you know, all of Amy's fans probably hate me for it, but for obvious reasons, I don't like it.
Right.
And you played that first album, which I thought was a great album, Frank.
Stronger Than Me.
And I don't think you can get any better than Stronger Than Me. She won an Ivor Novello Award for that. She's a brilliant, brilliant song.
Okay, I lied. That wasn't the last question. Here's the last question.
Oh, go ahead.
Really, the choking game?
The choking game.
What was this choking game that Amy would do? She would play it often as a child.
Well, she saw my son choked on a piece of meat, and I flipped out. And I, you know, I did the Heimlich, whatever, but I didn't manage it, and, you know, whatever. And my mum was there to, you know, calmly save the day. You know, but Amy was two, but she understood straight away that, you know, by throwing herself on the floor and pretending to choke, she's going to, you know, get a rise out of me. So, you know, the first couple of times was interesting. I thought she was really choking. But after the third or fourth time, you know, we just let her get on with it.
And so
she understood.
She would do this in inopportune places.
Yes, in the street, in the shopping center. You know, she'd throw herself on the floor.
And then you just would scoop her up?
No, just leave her there. Let her get on with it.
Mitch Winehouse, Mr. Winehouse, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jonathan. I really enjoyed it.
I've been speaking with Mitch Winehouse about the life and death of his daughter, singer Amy Winehouse. His memoir, Amy, My Daughter, is published by It Books. Mitch, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jonathan.